Hiya, friends. Welcome to the Loose and Conversational Podcast. My name is David Keem, and every week I sit down with friends, old and new, over drinks to chat about whatever. This week we have Megan Coots join the podcast while she downs a couple Aperol spritzes. It seems that due to popular demand, Jen has become my unofficial guest host, so she joins me as well. She's drinking gin and Perrier, I'm drinking whiskey sodas, so let's get to this.
Welcome to the Loose and Conversational Podcast.
So it feels a little like we've graduated.
I know.
Yeah.
Right. What are we going to do without Kylie?
Well, we tried to have two guest stars who backed out. So Megan threw
yeah,
us a
we
role.
Did. Yeah.
I'm the backup of the backup.
Yeah. So the other voice you're hearing right now is Megan. Which Megan do you want to be? Kaiser?
No.
Coots?
God, no. Yeah, Coots.
Coots?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
way not to Kaiser. Bring up the ex-husband.
No, what was your, I got
Campbell.
Confused. Campbell, yeah. Yeah. we've known Megan for what? Four years?
Three names.
Yeah.
Two weddings.
Yeah, she's had three last names.
Yeah. A woman of many names.
She's not afraid to back out if things aren't working for her.
No. Sure isn't.
I think I need to turn my mic down.
Unlike you and I, who stay forever and ever.
Well, I learned from the worst. the best and the worst.
I do it just long enough that it feels like forever.
Yeah. Well, that year and a half felt like forever for me. Yeah. So
fair point.
You were only married a year and a half?
Yeah. Together, 12 total when I left him, but married only about 18 months exactly.
Wow. Where'd you go for your honeymoon?
Mediterranean, like Croatia. Where else did we go? I don't remember now. But like all that.
You
area.
Don't remember?
I literally trying to block
so
it out.
It was so long.
It was this amazing romantic week where, I don't know.
No, we went to Nice.
Croatia.
Nice, Marseille, like south coast of France. And we did Venice and... Oh, Barcelona. Yeah. And then we finished in Paris, but I got really bad food poisoning in Paris. So we did actually go into the city. We just stayed at like Charles de Gaulle, like the actual little suburb around the airport, which is really cool. Highly recommend.
Really?
Yeah. If you ever go to Paris, spend your last night in Charles de Gaulle because it's like 20 minutes from the airport. And it's like this really cool antique town and like everything's really walkable and there's Marriott's and stuff there. So it's accessible.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to Paris. I want to make sure there's a Marriott there.
That's where you're going to get your discount.
Yeah. And they're cheap.
Not to criticize Marriott's because we are sitting in the lovely podcast studio at the No, I mention that every podcast.
Gotcha.
You gave me a funny look there.
Well, yeah.
Right. Like nobody knows where this is. It's literally a corner in the hotel. If somebody said, hey, go find the podcast studio, they'd never find it.
Even the people who built our apartment would be like, what are you talking about? What room?
Yeah. Even if they knew the name of the room, they'd be like, I don't know. There's two of them? So, Megan.
Yes, I do.
She's not that we didn't want to have her on the podcast, but we had two people cancel this weekend.
Yeah.
This week.
I would have come by eventually.
Oh, yeah, eventually.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I think we're starting to get a better idea of what we're doing. We have a card game to play.
Okay.
We actually remembered the cards this time. Well, we had cards last time.
Yes.
But we never used them.
No.
And I actually have something I want to talk about. Well, I had two things to talk about, but Monica didn't show up.
Oh, yes.
And I thought, and it was something sort of related more towards leadership. It was what happens when the leader goes crazy or when like leaders, senior leaders like Trump have very obvious mental health issues. Because I think you can agree Donald Trump has a mental health issue.
Well, I don't know.
Or whoever's writing his speeches does.
I don't think people are writing those speeches.
I'm torn on Donald Trump, if we're going to talk about this. I'm torn between he has mental illness or he is a fucking mastermind who has been planting these seeds for 20 years and that everything is just
you
falling
are insane.
To No, honest to God. He's been talking about mail-in ballots being frauds for 4 years. And now that he's losing, it's like the perfect card to pull out. It's like he sets these little seeds along the way so that when things don't go his way, he's got like all of this
stuff. But even...
Or does he just also plant and like foster the seeds? What? So he's just creating the fraud.
Or maybe he just has things he goes to.
But is he consciously doing it? Or like, you know, like, or is
he
just so crazy?
Oh, no, I believe he believes, like, I think that what he is saying, he believes is real.
Yeah. So you believe that he believes that there's widespread fraud, that the Democrats are stealing the election, that mail-in ballots are full of fraud, and that people are sitting at the counting things, changing
ballots. Yes, 100% ballots. He believes it. Because what would be the alternate that he would need to believe?
That he is losing.
Yeah, that doesn't enter his consciousness, right? Yeah.
Well, so then you talk about the leader. So the leader is, and maybe let's not even say crazy, because maybe he's not crazy, but he's clearly going against the grain. He's clearly threatening, you know, democracy as a whole in the United States, and he's got his entire team endorsing that and like pandering to that and supporting that publicly.
Well, I guess we're going to talk about this then, because that was my question: is the what should his team be doing? Like, isn't?
But his team has as much at stake. They want the power of the presidency as he does.
Yeah, for people listening, it's Friday, November 6th. I'm not sure when this is going to come out, but we still don't know who's won. Yeah. We're all assuming right now Biden's won.
Yeah.
So who knows? Maybe by the time this comes out, Trump pulled it out of the bag. And
it's possible. And then we're crazy.
And everybody's going to be like, I don't know what they're talking about. You know, he's being crazy right now. And I think when you say, well, the people around him, they have just as much to gain or lose. Not anymore.
Because I still think it could be anybody's election. Most of those races are still close. So there is still something at stake.
The way the Trump camp is acting, because I'm sure they have access to information we don't have.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of them think it's over.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I've heard, I'm sure like most people, that, you know, his team isn't really aligned with him. But that's
How could you be aligned with him?
But they're not publicly coming out and saying that, right? I mean, they're still publicly
supporting
him.
Like, he says stuff, and then you're like, yes, Mr. President. And then inside you're like, I can't fucking believe I just said yes to that.
Hey, I do that sometimes with my own boss. So,
really?
You know, like if your boss is like, has a crazy idea, you're like, okay, yeah. And then you try to like steer it in a different direction. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
I guess.
Right? Do you think everybody agrees with you when they say they agree with you?
I don't think I'm mentally ill.
Do you think there's a lot of like yes buts?
With Donald Trump?
Yeah.
No. I think the people who say yes, but he just gets rid of.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the people in his administration has been seeing that go on for a long time. But I mean, at some point in the next day or so or whatever, somebody is going to have to nut up and be like, Mr. President,
but they're not.
You
they're
lost the election.
They're going to do all the recounts. They're going to do these frivolous lawsuits. Like, the reality is this could still be, a couple months in the making before anybody has to nut up and say, hey, bud, you got to move out.
I think by Christmas we'll have some sort of idea, right?
Yeah. But I mean, a couple of his lawsuits have already been thrown out almost immediately, but...
Two haven't at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? I mean, looks like he's not going to win by a convincing enough margin that none of it matters.
But I don't think it's convincing enough for him. Mm-hmm. And then what about his children? Like, do his children say, hey, dad?
Oh, well, little Donnie, for sure. No, I think he's on board with him. I think Ivanka is just like, she's just distanced herself so that she doesn't have to have that conversation.
No, but I think Donald Trump Jr. wants to run for president in 4 or 8 years.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Right? Oh, 100%. I think that's why he's trying to inherit the Donald Trump brand right now. That's why he's sending out the crazy tweets. He's fanning the flames. I think, he wants to take his dad's base for himself.
Yeah. Which, I mean, after this election, if Biden wins, that base will be quite inflamed and... You know, right for the picking. Just whether it'll expand or not is a different question.
Yeah, actually, and that's part two of what I really want to talk about. But just to finish up maybe this, what do you do? Like, what do you do if the guy in charge has clear mental health issues?
I don't know.
Like, I'm sure a professional would.
But he's not going
to have an answer to that. But how many organizations have a psychologist or something on hand to go in and talk to the big guy when he goes crazy?
Well, it doesn't even matter, because at the end of the day, any mental health issues, you need to be able to acknowledge it yourself first. Mm-hmm. And if that's not a possibility, then it doesn't matter, right? Like,
no, I 100% agree. I mean, I have people in my personal life with mental health issues, and I think the way I've always dealt with them is just you have to just kind of appease to an extent, because you don't want to break that connection with them, and you don't want to like encourage and be an enabler, but at the same time you don't want to alienate them, right? Because then they're just going to turn like Trump does. He's just going to fire you and move on to someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And so I think you do have to appease to an extent, and you know, leave little breadcrumbs, but ultimately they have to figure it out themselves.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's different when you're talking about the president of the United States, but I mean, a typical leader as an employee, you decide whether this is, you know, the shit you're going to deal with or not, and if it's not, then you hop off the train. You don't get a therapist to go see your boss.
Yeah. No, 100%. Yeah. You decide that you're not willing to continue that relationship yet.
So you quit.
Yeah. And at some point, someone else has to move into the White House.
Yeah.
So whether anyone tells him or not, I mean, the moving vans are coming and the remodelers will arrive. And at some point, he's going to have to find a new residence.
Yeah. So. At some point, he's going to be escorted out. whether it's in a, you know, couple months or 4 years.
Did he even move into the White House, though? I remember that was kind of a...
Well, he still had all of his other homes. And it was actually Melania, right?
Melania.
Melania.
Who didn't move for like a year.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, no, they live in the White House.
Yeah, I think he's maintained other residences.
Yeah.
I think he spends a lot of time at Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have meetings in the Oval Office without actually having meetings in the Oval Office, depending how mentally ill he is at that point.
That's true. And yeah, I would say in COVID, you could Zoom in anywhere, but he doesn't believe in COVID. So.
Yeah, and he probably doesn't know how to operate Zoom. So it's like, yeah, you're on right now. You're on CNN. Just talk.
That's what they should start doing is like when he wants to do a press conference, like take him to a room that isn't actually a press conference room. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like all fake
mics. Oh, yeah, have and actors.
Like fake everything, you know, and just be like, go ahead, go say what you need to say. And then he can have his own little press conference, say whatever crazy shit he wants to say, and then nobody's the wiser.
Yeah. Just put cardboard cutouts out.
Exactly. Maybe just tell him that you're still the president, even though you've lost. Just move him to another White House.
Yeah, he's rich enough. They could make like a pretend Oval Office.
Yeah, for sure they could. And some, maybe they're already working on
a pretend
that.
Air Force One, and it's like
fake bills, you know? Like, and then in 4 more years, he'd be like, oh, the shit I accomplished in the last 4 years is just incredible.
Okay, time to go, Mr. President. And time to put that hood we've had to keep over your head since the election of 2020. All right.
Exactly. The White House is under renovation, sir. We need to move you.
People sure have started to like me since I started wearing this hood.
Like, this seems like a far better option than, you know, telling him he's lost. Just tell him he's won and then, like, just recreate isolate everything.
Him. Yeah. Put him into isolation.
And, like, let everybody be in on it.
Yeah, exactly. They can still keep their jobs because as far
Wolf
as he's
Blitzer
concerned.
Comes on to CNN and says, we have something a little unusual for you right now. Instead of a concession speech, Donald Trump is going to give his victory speech and accept the presidency because that's what we've told him is happening.
Yeah.
And we're just going to keep going with that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because why would they show everybody?
Yeah. No. I mean, he doesn't need to know, right?
Yeah. They could just, whatever they call that now, where they like put his face on another actor's body, giving a wonderful concession speech.
Exactly. Well, isn't it Alec Baldwin does a great Trump impression?
There you go.
So, I mean, call him up. He's not busy.
And I'm sure, like we said, he's not tech savvy. So you just like patch in that feed on his TV at the end of the night. You know, like they really can do this and then everything's fine. Democracy stands. Donald Trump gets
right
to stay president.
Time. Oh, you brought me two. Oh, good for you.
David's drinks have arrived.
Thank you.
So anyways, I think this is a great plan.
Okay.
And well, then he can keep tweeting. People are going to continue to think he's crazy because he is. So
he is. Yeah, he absolutely is. And then they could turn that into like another reality show.
Like the Truman Show. It's
like, and it runs for like 12 years until he heroically passes away. He fights a war.
Exactly.
China becomes part of the United States. It just gets...
Only white people live in the U.S. now, you know?
Yeah. Pence passes away and he's replaced with a witch.
This could be fun.
They resurrect Ronald Reagan. And he has to run against him in 4 years.
Yeah. And no, and in 4 years, don't worry, sir. We've gotten rid of democracy. You are now the president until you die.
This is a freaking golden idea.
I mean, this is Donald Trump's world now. He doesn't have to run again. He's a dictator now.
Or don't even worry about Ronald Reagan. Just have a Trump ballot in 4 years.
No, but he could beat Ronald Reagan. That would be the thing.
Oh, yeah. But like, him and his son.
Trump versus Trump.
Oh, yeah. But how do we convince Don Jr. that it's...
Well, fair enough.
He would just have to play along.
Yeah, we spend 4 years beating Don Jr. Or we just get rid of him.
Yeah.
We bring in a new actor.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, there's got to be a lot of guys that look like that.
I'm sure. Slimy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Trump has to have illegitimate children somewhere.
He's got to. Maybe that's what they do. Maybe the new Don Trump Jr. turns against his dad. His dad fires him. And then some daughter that he's never met, who is just a freaking knockout, comes into the scene.
Yeah.
Like Borat's daughter, something like that, where she's really like simple and dumb at the beginning.
Yeah.
But then he takes her under his wing.
Yeah.
Oh, this is gold.
I tell you, we got to get this podcast out stat so that this can actually be a thing.
This is our idea.
Copyright.
Yeah. Trademark.
Copyright the Loose and Conversational podcast.
The Trump Show.
Yeah, the Trump Show.
It works.
This is golden.
Yeah.
Golden. Right.
I'm a huge Johnny Depp fan. It pains me to see what he's going through.
Well, and he's just, and it's not even like the whole wife beater thing. I truly believe that two people in a bad relationship can bring out the worst in each other.
Yeah, so I feel it was truly toxic. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think even if I don't think he's an abuser in general, that's why I always hate the, so-and-so didn't abuse me as an argument, because I think that you put one person with another person and it's toxic, it can create that regardless mm-hmm. of history, right?
I would love to have been there when the judge or whoever it was like, no, that was a dog that shit in the bed, not your wife. To have him be there, be like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, but Johnny Depp, I mean, he's got obviously drug issues, money issues, like the issues this guy has.
No, he doesn't have issues.
I'm sorry.
The world needs heroes and anti-heroes.
Addicted, poor, washed up actors.
Yeah, but he comes. No, Johnny Depp, in my mind, and I'm no expert on Johnny Depp. I've only watched a few of his movies and read, I think, one Rolling Stone article about him.
Oh, well then.
But I really like his movies. So yeah. I think that makes me an expert.
Sure, sure. Okay.
I think he is in the mold of a long line of like famous people who are a little tragic, but super entertaining. And they're just cut from the, they're just a little bit different.
Well,
like Ernest Hemingway and Hunter S. Thompson and, you know, fill in some of these names. Yeah. I mean, and he has
Keanu Reeves. He has
Keanu
his
Reeves
own,
is like the nicest guy in the
world. I know,
world.
But he has his own eccentricity. It's in a good way. Like he's on the hero side of things.
I think Nicolas Cage might be a better example.
That's also a good example, although I'm not a fan. So.
Well, I don't.
You're not a fan of Nicolas Cage?
I'm like highly not a fan. But like he's, like refuse to watch movies with him in it.
He's an odd duck though. Like, I mean, he's got a lot of eccentricities.
Yeah. How can you not like Nicolas? What has he ever done to you?
Spoken.
I mean, he's not a great actor. He plays the same character in every movie.
He plays Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. Exactly.
Do you know what his 27 movies or however many they are in the last little while?
You told me something about
get
it.
Ready
the ones
to fall
Netflix?
In love with Nicolas Cage. Yeah, a lot of them are on Netflix.
Okay.
So he got in trouble with his taxes and debt and stuff that. I think just taxes. So he made like 27 movies in a super short span of time. And some of them are, I haven't seen one yet that's awesome, but some of them are definitely entertaining. Like they're unique.
Did you ever watch on SNL, what was his name? Andy Samberg. And they would do like Nick and Nick. And so like Andy Samberg would do his impression and Nicolas Cage was like right beside him. And they
were
like out Nick caging each other. Mm-hmm. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, there's one where I don't know if I can remember. He has a wife. I think his wife, the love of his life, whatever. I think she dies or she's murdered or something. And then later on, he meets another lady and he realized his wife has been reincarnated as her daughter.
What?
Yeah.
I mean, this like, sounds classic,
there's
Nick
flames
Cage.
And it is like such a crazy friggin' movie. Everybody has to watch it.
I think the only Nick Cage movie I actually liked was probably Face Off.
No, he won an Oscar.
Yeah, but that was before I was cool. Like before I watched, like I'm younger than
that's
you.
That's a great, Leaving Las Vegas, great movie.
Actually, that's one that I don't mind.
Great movie for this because he's a chronic alcoholic in it.
There you go.
Wait, I'm thinking of something else. Is that the one where some rich guy takes his wife to Vegas and then he has to dress up as an Elvis impersonator to rescue her?
Sounds right.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah. Okay. He's not rich. No.
No, the guy who kidnaps his wife is rich or like tries to take his wife away from him is rich.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, because he like.
Maybe I need to watch the movie again.
Spoils her. Or something. And
No. Nicolas Cage is a chronic alcoholic. He's decided to kill himself by drinking.
Okay.
And then he meets a woman and has like a love affair, but he's this chronically broken person. Oh, it's a great movie.
Okay, then
movie.
I'm thinking of a different
you know,
Las
but
Vegas
you gotta appreciate. Yeah, there's been more Las Vegas movie. There's no banker casino that gets robbed in this one either. Nobody has a hangover. Well, who am I kidding? He has a hangover, but not the funny kind of hangover.
Yeah. Oh, National Treasure, I guess I watched.
How can you not like National Treasure?
I don't think I've seen it.
Well, that's
well then
you
can't
like
judge Nicolas Cage.
Because I don't watch movies with him in it, like on purpose.
Okay, unpopular opinion. Leonardo DiCaprio, dislike him strongly.
Really?
Yeah.
Why would you bring that up now?
Because we're talking about actors we don't
for
really
people
like.
Who are unpopular maybe new opinion. To this, Leonardo DiCaprio is not only one of my favorite actors, he's one of the only men I would sleep with. I mean, I don't want to. But
I wouldn't sleep with him.
Really?
I wouldn't.
You would sleep with him.
I wouldn't.
I wouldn't now, but 10 years ago, yes.
Mm.
Can I tell my Leonardo DiCaprio story?
Sure, the listeners haven't heard.
So I was working at a hotel in Kananaskis, and they were filming Inception, and he was at the hotel. And everybody was crazy about wanting to meet Leonardo DiCaprio. And I was one of the few people that was resenting, and I didn't want to meet Leonardo DiCaprio. I knew the whole everything was going to be just a lot of hassle, and it was a lot of work, it was a lot of really demanding people. But I ended up meeting him a few times. At one point, he was having dinner in the steakhouse, and I was working in the steakhouse, and there was a huge Christmas party also going on in the hotel, and they caught on that he was there, so we had to sneak him out the back door. When we were sneaking him out the back door, we sabered a bottle of champagne with him, because that's the kind of thing you do with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Mm-hmm.
And he was having dinner with friends, like genuine friends, and they were horsing around, and they were fun guys, right? We did the sabering, and then at some point later, I think it was even later that night, they were having a big party in the bar at the hotel, and he was kept away from almost everybody. I don't know if he didn't want to socialize or they just wanted him, but he was never really with everybody else. Most of the people at the hotel were crew. They were construction people. They were film people. They weren't all actors. Oh, there were actors. But there was doubles. There was stunt people. There was all these. It was pretty cool, actually. And then there was a UFC thing going on. So he actually came down to watch a little bit of the UFC, and it was a really big deal, even for everybody working on the movie, because I guess they don't really see him that much. Like, he wasn't there for the entire shoot at the time that they were filming this part of Inception. He literally came in for 5 days, did his stuff, and left. He comes down, he sits there, and he, I think he was, I don't know what he was doing. I wasn't there. I was actually at the door. Like, I could see him sitting there watching the thing, talking to people. Looked like he was having a good time, but he also kind of looked like he'd just as soon be left alone. And then after, like, maybe a relatively short period of time, he gets up and he leaves. And he leaves by himself. And I'm at the door because I was there to make sure. I knew who was with the movie crew and who definitely was part of the Christmas party that should not be coming in. So I was there just to make sure the wrong people didn't get in. And he walks by. And I said, have a good night. And he goes, yeah, have a good night. And he gets probably 20 feet away. And he stops and he turns around and comes back. And he goes, hey, you know that champagne thing earlier tonight? He goes, thanks. That was great. And he turns around and walks away again. And I'm like, I wouldn't have stopped, realized I forgot to thank the guy, turned around and come back.
That's pretty nice.
You're not a good person.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Leonardo DiCaprio, as much as press seems to beat up on him, he is genuinely a good guy. And this is in a group of, I'll just say it, like, you know, 100 people, where there was maybe 3 good people. And he was one of them, right? And he's by far the biggest star. By far. Oh, I mean, Christopher, what's the director?
Nolan?
Yeah, Christopher Nolan was there that same night. He told me off, which I thought was is another claim to fame of mine. I was told off by Christopher Nolan. But the guy's so rich and entitled and above everybody, which is fine, right? Yeah. Like, maybe if I was that rich and that,
I mean, you would,
you know,
be
famous.
You would be.
That's the thing. I probably would be, right? That's what I'm saying. I'm being honest. I wouldn't have stopped and turned around and come back. You know, in the middle, because this was also in the lobby of the hotel, where he needed to boot and, you know, get the fuck out of there and get back to his room before somebody recognized him.
Yeah, he should have been alone there in the first place, probably.
Yeah, but that's the way it was. He's like, he comes down to watch the fight, and then he turns around, I'm going to go back to my room. Oh, I'm going to thank the fat guy there at the door for the champagne thing he did, and then I'm going to go back to my room. And it was, like, amazing, right?
Well, it won you over.
Yeah, yeah. And not he's not just a nice guy. He's a good-looking guy. He's tall. He's fit. At the time, he was fit. I think I've seen pictures, but who am I to talk?
Fair.
Right? I'd be happy if he put on a few pounds if we were, you know, rolling around. Oh, God. To make me feel less self-conscious.
Well, did I tell you about the time I met Steven Tyler?
No, let's hear.
So, my first ever concert.
Hey, Jen, while she's talking, how about you grab me a drink there?
My first ever concert was Aerosmith.
Please.
So, my dad always, you know, raised me to very...
Are you older than me? Your first concert was Aerosmith?
No, my dad really wanted me to appreciate classic music. And so, technically, my first concert was Avril Lavigne.
I'm just kidding, everybody. I don't even think she's half my age. Or you're a little over half my age.
I'm more than half your age, yeah. But, and honestly, I went to Avril Lavigne and Aerosmith in the same month because my mom got me Avril Lavigne tickets and my dad got me Aerosmith tickets. And hands down, Aerosmith was an amazing show. Way, way better to just entertainment value than Avril Lavigne. And plus, they had a whole extension out on the stage that his mic was on a standing mic stand out, like, on this just really long, skinny platform that came into the floor. And we were literally one row from that. So at one point, he was singing, and his scarves were, like, I could almost touch them. He was so close. So it was pretty awesome. So cut to when I'm in hospitality and I'm working downtown, Aerosmith is staying in the hotel and I learn a lot about drama between him and the guitar player.
Is there a lot of time in between these two things?
Yes, I was, how old was I? Probably 12 at my first concert, and this would have been probably 22, 23, so about a decade. But I have a bunch of their albums, I have their greatest hits, and like, there's times when I just feel like listening to Aerosmith.
You do not strike me as an Aerosmith fan.
Yeah, I actually really enjoy their music. Not all the time, I have to be in the right mood, but yeah, if it's on, I know a lot of the words to the songs and stuff like that. So then I'm working the desk.
Megan just went up a notch.
I'm working the desk, and I look at the elevators, and they open, and Steven Tyler walks up to me at the front desk and says, I want to get something to eat. Where should I go? And literally, I didn't even know what to say. I was so awestruck. And like, he's very handsome in person. And just like, exactly. Yeah. Well, for him, like, he's exactly who you expect him to be. Like, his showmanship, what he dresses like on stage, is he's in layered scarves and like eccentric outfits and like exactly what you would picture him to walk down the street in it would be what he would go on the stage with.
Wow.
So it was intimidating, and he, you know, his big hair and his big lips, and it's like, where should I go get something to eat? And I remember that he was vegan.
Mm.
So I,
of course he is.
Yeah. So I recommended a couple vegan places like Pan Minotti and a couple other things, but Taste of Edmonton was on. So I said, if you can't decide and you want to try a bunch of different things, go right up the street a few blocks, and
no one
booths.
Will know who you are.
Yeah. It'll you'll
be,
blend
you'll
right
be totally
in.
Incognito.
Maybe take off some scarves and you'll be fine. Yeah.
What you should do is just outside the hotel, there's a homeless guy. Exchange some clothes with him.
There you go. There you go. Yeah.
Well, that's probably where he got the clothes in the first place. But yeah, so I said, well, you can try a bit of everything, and there's all local restaurants, and it's really great, and you just buy tickets, and then you get as much as you want. So he went to Taste of Edmonton. It was,
and that's like a famous thing that happened.
It was all over the news. Oh. It was all over the radio. That was me.
Wow.
Yeah. And then a few hours later, I'm still working the desk, and his assistant comes up with him in tow, and he says, that was great. Thank you so much. That was amazing food. I had such a great time. It was so much fun. And his assistant came to me, and he said, yeah, thank you for sending us to literally the busiest and most crowd-packed area of the city. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
was,
I said,
that was free. Yeah.
Welcome.
Didn't he, didn't he sing with somebody, or he found somebody singing one of his songs or something?
I don't know. But yeah, he got mauled, basically. Mm. But he enjoyed it. So, I mean.
Yeah, I met Snoop Dogg, and he was a pompous little ass.
I could see that.
Yeah, like he even had someone follow him around with a sunglass case holder. So that when he took off, like he would take off his sunglasses, hand them to this person. They would then bring out the sunglass case and then put them in the sunglass case, close them down for like the 2 minutes he didn't want them, and then bring them back out for
him. I think that's all part of his image, though.
Okay, but come on.
But I think, what's
that's
that called?
That's a rap thing.
There was a TV show called this. His entourage. I think it's important that these guys have an entourage.
Okay, yeah. What's the job posting for sunglass holder?
Well, interestingly enough.
I mean, if it pays as much as I make, I would open and close a case. Sure.
Like Leonardo DiCaprio's buddies came with them. And they actually came way before him. And then they stayed for a long time after him. And it was funny because we were told he travels with a private chef. And we had to accommodate his private chef. And was there a kitchen he could have access to? So we're like, yeah, there's a kitchen in the building he's staying in. Everything's going to be great. We meet his private chef. And when we meet his private chef, we have our chef meet his private chef.
Yeah.
With the executive sous chef. And a couple other cooks to have a brigade at his disposal.
Yeah.
The guy wasn't a chef.
Did like, he cook?
He made a smoothie, I think. And then as we got to know these guys, they were his friends.
There you go.
So which he I just thought, which
gives
I,
them job titles or whatever.
I don't, well,
like
I,
legit
I
titles.
Don't well, I don't know if the others did, but it was cool. Right? Like, that's who we had dinner with in the steakhouse.
Sure.
And I'm sure, like, I wonder what it's like for them.
So he had dinner with his chef in the steakhouse.
Yeah,
his chef they didn't were fun make guys, the steakhouse. Right?
Yeah, no. His chef didn't cook for him. But I can't remember what he ate. I can't remember him. If he ate regular food. I honestly don't remember. I know he, like, they all come with a big long rider.
Yeah.
Who was the girl in Inception? The little girl, she's Canadian.
Ellen Page?
Yeah. Oh. She was only, she's a vegan or something. And she, like, was only going to eat raw vegetables.
Okay.
And so.
Yeah, raw diets are a thing. Yeah.
When she arrived, they made this tray of vegetables for her, which was far larger than realistically it should have been. And then they take it to her room. They knock and they go to it, and she opens the door and they hand her this enormous platter of vegetables. And she's like, holy shit, what am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like she's like this tall.
Yeah. Well, there's like raw vegan restaurants, like Nourish was one on White Ave. And literally,
oh, come on.
Nothing can be cooked, I think, more than 100 degrees or something. So you can, like, lightly steam things, but, like, you can't heat them past a certain point. But I had, like, a chocolate brownie there. Would never know it was raw vegan. Like, tasted normal.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
It's closed now, so I mean.
Yeah.
I don't think it really tastes like, if I put them side by side, I think you'd be able to pick out the real one.
If there's no meat, and okay, I can make an exception for with cheese sometimes, but if there's no meat, personally, I don't feel like I'm eating.
Agreed.
Like if I have a salad, maybe I enjoy it. But if I only had a salad, that doesn't count as a meal. I'm still starving.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't think I could be. I don't like tofu. I don't like beans. I don't like lentils. Like, I don't like all the vegan food.
I don't like vegans.
I've got some in the family, so.
Do you? I wonder if I know any. Do we have anybody who's vegan?
I feel like we do, but name's not coming to my mind.
I wonder if I know any vegans. I mean, there's a lot of them out there.
There are.
So I should. Oh. You know what? I'm wrong. And
You know a vegan.
Yeah, Caroline's brother, and he's a wonderful guy.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, wonderful guy. Really healthy. Yeah.
You have to know a vegan, or you'd know if you know a vegan, because vegans always tell you they're vegans constantly. Mm-hmm. So
he doesn't actually. Oh. He's a really great guy. Wonderful human being.
Well, he can be a great guy and talk about being a vegan all the time.
But he doesn't. He doesn't, right? But when we go to his house, not his house, but we go to her parents' house for a big meal, and everybody's having, you know, we're having a turkey dinner or something like that, and he's having literally a can of beans. It comes out, gross. Right? Like, what's up with the can of beans?
But I just want to, for our listeners, to know that you can be a vegan and a good guy. Like, they're not mutually exclusive.
Well no, I'm realizing I was wrong when I said that, because I started criticizing vegans.
Oh. And then I think you can still criticize them, even if they're good
people.
But
every time you mention you're a vegan, it makes you worse of a person.
Well, so. Definitely. Like, you definitely lose some good points. Yeah. You know, like, you're going to hell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I eat meat. I don't tell you constantly, oh, I'm a meat eater.
Yeah. I wonder if we should try that.
I've got vegans at home, so I'll be like, oh, hey, I eat meat.
Well, and especially when vegans are like, well, I'm against cruelty to animals.
I'm against cruelty to vegetables.
And I'd be like, I would be against cruelty to animals, but sometimes my dog gets into the garbage and I can't do anything to him. Yeah. I'm so glad to do it to a random pig.
Yeah.
Well, I met Katy Perry once.
Oh.
She was horrible.
Oh.
She wouldn't speak with me directly. We were told not to speak with her or to even look at her. She was like 45 minutes leaving and then was calling us asking why the elevators weren't locked for her. And I literally had to wait another 20 minutes when I got upstairs. Then finally she did address me directly and asked if we had abnormally high altitude, to which I said, no, we're normal, which was a complete lie, but I had no idea what the answer was.
What is the answer now? Do you know now?
We're
apparently
not abnormally
Edmonton
high.
Has one of the highest altitude cities in the world.
So how did she know?
We're not.
Yeah. Fun fact I learned following that. And because she had altitude sickness from landing. So she was having trouble with her ears and her...
Yeah. The only person in the history that's come to Edmonton and got altitude sickness.
So then I see her assistant come out of the room with literally a large freezer Ziploc full of pill bottles of miscellaneous size and shapes. So I'm I hope you have something for altitude sickness.
I was going to say, I want those pill bottles.
Yeah. And not the same without makeup.
Well, who is?
Oh, who is? Yeah. Who
is? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was alarming.
You know who is that for me? You know who's that for me. Well, so do you.
I think so.
Who?
Shania Friggin' Twain.
Oh, well, I also met Shania Twain. That's how we met.
Yeah. That's how you, it is how we met.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, we didn't meet then. Well, that's just a shared experience.
I mean,
that's just kind of how it all came to pass.
Our souls met in that experience. Yeah.
That's where it started. That's really where it started.
That's how I knew where I wanted to work.
Although I didn't actually have a bad experience with her.
No.
It was just all her people saying, oh, people can't do this, people can't do that. These are her demands. This
she
is
needs
what
she 13
needs.
Humidifiers in her room.
Nespresso. Yeah, Nespresso.
Yeah. Yeah.
Secure entry and exit from the hotel.
Fair. That seems fair.
Well, I'm so glad my previous hotel bought like 10 humidifiers and an espresso only for her to leave before sleeping to come to this hotel. So.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You guys should have sold great us. Investment. We should have thought about that. We should have bought the things from you.
Right?
Like, we had to run around and find them.
Yeah. We had bought out the city.
Said poor Curtis to, where did we have said them? There was like only
the
like
bay,
a couple places
the bay
you could
to
buy
get the Nespresso. It was only the bay at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And who goes to the bay?
No, that's just, yeah. A sad story probably in a few
Curtis,
months.
Could you send your grandma to the bay? The funny thing about her was I didn't actually meet her until we were doing the secure entry after her show. So I had to come back to the hotel.
Oh, okay.
And then she arrived and we did the secure entry. And I just basically was the elevator jockey because the bellman, there wasn't a bellman around or something.
Bell person.
When I took her up the elevator, that was the first time I met her. And then when I came out of the elevator, everybody was like, well, how was she? And I'm like, she didn't talk. She looked pretty tired. And like, was she hot? And I'm not criticizing her. I was just being honest. I said, she looked like a tired 50-year-old woman. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, but she's pretty hot, right? And I'm like, no, she looked like a 50-year-old who had just had a long day and capped it off with singing and dancing on stage under hot lights in front of a lot of people.
Yeah.
And literally every guy I talked to was like, yeah, hot.
When I met her, she was in a really weird blonde wig. And like a bunch of like clothing and big sunglasses and stuff to not be recognized. And
that's her thing is we're like bacteria that needs to be avoided.
Yeah. And she refused to speak English to anyone.
What would she speak? French?
French, because she moved to Switzerland to be with her husband.
Yeah. Her and her husband spoke French.
Yeah. So her and her husband would speak French like obviously. Oh, sorry. Obviously about whoever
when
they were with.
When did she get divorced?
Well, Mutt. She divorced Mutt many
No,
years
no, no.
Ago.
This is the second guy. So she divorced Mutt because
he was dating her current husband's wife.
Wife, yeah. So they basically all switched.
Yeah, they basically swap partners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear the joke I told her? And she, they laughed. So she is, one thing I will say about her, she is the richest person I've ever met. And I don't mean that in, well, I'm sure Leonardo DiCaprio has a lot of money in the bank too. I'm sure I've met a lot of people in the hotels I worked at. But she like knew how to live, maybe? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, so we left the hotel and I drove her to her plane like on the tarmac, right?
Oh, okay.
Which I didn't know was a thing you could do. And like she literally hopped out of the hotel car, got into her plane, and they took off. Like it was... I didn't know that was a thing, but apparently it's a thing. And her security guy, who I don't remember his name, he's not quite Leonardo DiCaprio in my books, but this guy was so cool and he had such great stories. He used to do security for Van Halen, and his job, as he described it, was to make sure David Lee Roth didn't die, which apparently, pretty hard job.
I can see that.
Yeah, so he was an amazing guy. So he was sitting beside me in the front seat, and then Shania Twain and her husband were in the back seat, and then all their luggage was in another vehicle. So we're driving, and we had to do secure exit, which meant we had to shut everything off. And there was a wedding going on. And so there's people coming into the hotel for a wedding. And we had to basically for, you know, like 30 seconds be like, I'm sorry, you can't come through here. And we had the Cadillac sitting in the porte-cochere with like both doors open and the hatch open. And so we come out, we get her in, we close the doors and we take off. And as we walk by, there's this one little kid with a wedding and his dad. And the kid's melting down and screaming and crying and freaking out. And his dad's like trying to calm him down and stuff. But the big thing is his dad had dragged him outside when he started melting down. He wasn't doing it. So we get in the car, we drive away, and she's like, that father, he's doing the right thing. Like, that's exactly what you should do. Give them space. And she's like talking about, you know, giving parental advice to me and the security guy and her husband, I guess.
At least it wasn't marriage advice because clearly that didn't
work for her. Well, they seemed very happy. Well, her and her husband seemed very happy. You know. And money does that, you know.
And second husbands, Megan. Are you happy Switzerland. With your second husband?
Oh, extremely.
Yeah.
So you
definitely
know,
upgrade, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you know me. I don't know. Mottline's a pretty cool guy. Mm-hmm. But you know me. I can't stop. I always want to talk, right?
No.
And so we're driving and I go, I have a daughter. And there's like complete silence in the car. So I'm like, that's probably an invitation to keep talking.
I don't think it is.
Yeah. And I can't remember what she had said, something about how like one of her kids like was really strong willed and you had to teach them lessons and things like that. And that was part of being a good parent. And I said, yeah, I remember when my daughter, we were living in Vancouver at the time, and my daughter would always wander away and I would always get mad at her and I'd tell her, don't wander away. And she still would. She was like two or three at the time. And we were in a department store and she started to wander away. So I'm like, I'm just going to let her wander. Right. And when she's going to turn around and see I'm not there, she'll learn a lesson. But then all of a sudden she walked through a rack of clothing into the next aisle. I can't walk through a rack of clothing. So I had to run all the way around. I run all the way around. And just as I run all the way around, I see her walk through another rack of clothing because now that's her game. So I have to like walk out and run all the way around again. So I stop talking, still silent. So I go, and that's why I don't have a daughter anymore. And then there was a pause and then they all started laughing and I was like, oh, thank God.
Oh, my God. I think you should say, like, hotel fun fact, when you have celebrities staying here, they have a really cheap rate.
Yeah, they do. They
you
do.
Have,
that's
like,
funny.
These really rich people staying here in your penthouse suites, and they get, like,
yep.
Basically. Well, but we don't give them really anything they ask for on their rider either. So it's, like, it's an exchange.
Yeah, that's true.
But they're not paying your high rate. They have, like,
For everybody who's listening, here's how it works.
Yeah.
Here's how it works. There's companies out there who book travel for entertainers.
Yeah.
Entertainers. And we sign a contract with the company to basically say, here, you give us a certain amount of volume, here's the rate that you get. And it's a very good rate.
Yeah.
Because you don't, us anyway, I know some hotels really want the celebrity to stay at their hotel because they want to be notable. But one thing that I mean, granted, we're talking about Shania Twain now, but that was years ago.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. We don't brag if we have a celebrity staying here until long after they stayed here.
Yeah.
Because we want them to be
safe. Yeah, this is like 5 years later.
Yeah,
right?
We want privacy. Them to be safe and comfortable, things like that. So what we want is we want the crew. We actually want we want more rooms.
The
we
dad's
don't want to have one room.
Stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So when we do get a celebrity staying here, and we've had Kirk Hammett, we've had the Prime Minister, we've had two Prime Ministers stay here. Mm-hmm. You know, we're a relatively new hotel, but
Cora.
We had Cora.
Oh, yeah, Cora. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah, but Cora, Cora from Cora's. Yeah, she was beautiful. She's a wonderful lady. I met her when the Prime Minister was here.
Yeah.
And like
I think
her
stay was kind of overshadowed.
Yeah,
really.
100%. But she was such a nice lady. Such a nice lady. And that was like the highlight.
Yeah.
And so if we do book us, you know, the entertainer, the main person, they pay whatever the cheap rate is, which is a pretty good rate.
Yeah.
Because if you're getting crew, you're not paying a lot of money for it. And then we complimentary upgrade them to the penthouse. The penthouse, which we do not sell.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the funny thing. Well, how much did you pay for the penthouse?
Yeah.
$149.
Exactly. They get a better rate than most people.
Yeah, absolutely. And they don't really pay for a lot of stuff.
No.
Right?
But we also give them the cheap rate, and then we look at their writer that asks for like only yellow M&Ms and only Dom Perignon, and we're like, okay, and then we shred it. And then
yeah, well, that's not our responsibility to fill out a rider.
Okay,
no, I feel like that's someone...
Rich, you're famous, you're going to a hotel. What's on your rider?
Oh, that's raspberry a really good question.
Schweppes. Raspberry Schweppes?
It's very hard to find.
Yeah.
Seasonal, only in certain stores, and the best ginger ale there is.
Interesting. So that would be on your rider.
That would be on my rider. And it probably is not available in the US, so yeah. I would definitely ask for it there.
And you'd ask for like 20 bottles of it.
I mean, at least a six pack.
I mean, no,
like, I don't want to be presumptuous.
Oh, but your rider can't be like, oh, just a six pack of Schweppes.
But it would take them a lot to find it.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough.
Schweppes is a Canadian company. Like, I just feel like it's already asking a lot.
All right, Raspberry Schweppes. David, what's on your rider? They have to comply. Or according to Megan, not really, but...
You know, I don't think I have a lot of things. I hate to let you down, but when I stay in a hotel, I really like quiet.
I think it's because you're not rich and famous. Like, we work in hotels. Those things are like, oh my God, are you serious? Right? But I think once you're rich and famous, the world just kind of goes to your head, and all of a sudden you're like, you're entitled to all these things.
But I would have people that would provide that. Like, the one thing I would want the hotel to provide would be like a nice stocked bar.
Yeah.
Like, I'd want glassware and ice and booze and...
I want chips, candy, Empress gin, and then I'll go with some raspberry Schweppes.
Do you? See, I hate it. I hate it when they put food in my room.
Oh no, chip it snacks. That's not food.
No, I hate food in my room. It's very common when hotel people go to other hotels that there's an amenity or a room drop in there, whatever you want to call it. There's food. I hate it when there's food in my room because, first off, it's almost always too rich, right? It's like the kitchen trying to be like, look what we can do. And it's like,
It's your rider. You're telling them what you want.
Oh, no. You know what? Then maybe a bucket of fried chicken and a whole bunch of booze.
There you go. Now you're getting better, all right?
Yeah. You know what? Because honestly, you guys might not believe this.
Yeah.
But I feel most comfortable when I am the most white trash I can be.
True.
Like, I think, so we had Halloween last weekend, and I had a bucket of candy. I was out in the driveway, and I was ready to welcome kids, and I had three families make eye contact with me and keep on walking. And I tell that story, and I'm like, what's wrong with people these days? But I was working on a car in the driveway.
Probably wearing a wife beater in your kilt.
No, but I was wearing very dirty. I was working on a car, right? So I'm wearing old clothes. My hair is all gross. And the bucket of candy was sitting on my motorcycle. Mm-hmm. And
I wouldn't let my children come near you.
Yeah, that's basically what it got. But I was like, maybe I'm like Halloween costumed as white trash. Mm-hmm. But no, I'm white trash.
Yeah.
I 100%
am. Fair enough. So fried chicken flies, then alcohol. You fried always chicken, want a bunch alcohol. Of booze. Yeah.
Although I just had this thought. Yeah, I want a bunch of women in their underwear in my room. I mean, if I have that much money, like, I don't care.
I don't think the hotel can provide that. You just got to hope you have some groupies.
Like, if I want
anything. Yeah, that's more an assistant problem.
Yeah, and it's funny because Megan gave me that look. Like, she's like, that's kind of gross.
No, it's just.
You know what? It's not gross. It's like.
But as a hotelier, we would be grossed out. But as, like, someone's assistant, I feel like they'd just be like, where's the girls?
I guess isn't that what concierge is for? Like, drugs, prostitutes? Yes.
Like, I don't want to do anything with them.
Like,
I don't. But I think, like, there's nothing that makes a party kind of kick up a gear like booze. And then there's nothing that makes a party kick up a gear like really good drugs. And then there's nothing that makes a party kick up
trifecta.
A gear like a bunch of hot. Yeah. Right?
So with our concierge, have we ever had anybody ask for anything inappropriate?
Our concierge isn't a traditional concierge.
No, but people don't necessarily know that when they're staying here.
Oh, like at my previous hotel that was downtown, they got asked for, like strippers and blow all the time and prostitutes. And
would you guys say, sure, or sorry, sir, we don't do that?
You know, honestly, the concierge at the time was a really good friend of mine, and he had shady morals, so I feel like he would have done his
best.
No,
that's not shady morals at all.
That's customer service.
I have two concierge stories. Can I tell them?
Yeah, sure.
We're so getting away from the point here, but that's okay. Lucid conversation. That's
point?
What we do.
Yeah.
We were supposed to wrap up the what would you do?
Yeah. Was your rider?
What was your rider? And then do the card, and then we'd be done.
Yeah. Well, now we'll be
so
done.
So my
after
two
this.
Conversation story or not concierge. Conversation concierge stories. I was working in Whistler at a hotel, and I overheard the head concierge. Somebody went up to him and said, "What's a good restaurant to go to?" And he suggested Barefoot Bistro. So I waited till the guest was gone. And I went up to him. I was the assistant director of food and beverage at the time. And I said, hey, you know, we are trying to fill our own four diamond restaurant every night. If a guest comes up and says, what's a good place to go, you should say the Wildflower. Don't send him to Barefoot Bistro. And he says, David, if it's Christmas Eve and somebody wants to go to Barefoot Bistro, it's been sold out for months. There's not a reservation to be had. I can get them a table. Do you know why? And I said, no. He goes, because I have a table at Barefoot Bistro, which means it's mine. And I can put anybody who I want there. It doesn't matter how busy they are. It doesn't matter that it doesn't matter what's going on. Do you know why I have a table at Barefoot Bistro? I'm like, no. He says, because it is my responsibility to fill that table every single day of the year. So when people are paying $1,000 a night to stay in this hotel over Christmas and they want a reservation at Barefoot Bistro, it's my responsibility. But he basically schools me at how concierges work, right? So I was like, okay, so concierges exist there. They're not there for the people paying $149 a night, right? And that's why a lot of hotels now, especially here in Edmonton, they just don't get concierge culture, right? When I used to work for Fairmont, I used to work for Canadian Pacific Hotels, when they bought Fairmont, they picked up a bunch of U.S. hotels. And the call started going through global reservations in the East Coast of Canada. And somebody who I was, they used to come up to the hotel I was working at the time for vacation. And I remember once we heard this story where it was, we had just recently picked up the Plaza in New York, great hotel. And somebody called to make a reservation at the Plaza. And they said, before you confirm my reservation, can you call the concierge there and see if they have hot running water? And the person making the reservation laughed and said, well, I'm sure they have hot running water.
That's code for something.
And he's like, I realize that, but I really need you to call the concierge and see if they have hot running water. She's like, are you serious? He's like, yes. She calls the Plaza, asks for the concierge, says, I don't mean to waste your time, but I have a guest on the phone here who wants to book a stay at your hotel, and he wants to know if they have hot running water. So the concierge laughs, and she says, you can tell him we have hot running water, and if you want, you could put me on hold, and when you're done with him, I'll explain to you what that means. So she does. She puts the concierge on hold, finishes making the reservation to the guest, comes back, and the concierge explains that hot running water is code for, will the concierge get them a prostitute? And the person telling the story was like, I don't know what was more shocking, the fact that the guest requested that, or that the concierge was like, yes,
yep,
of course.
Of course.
Right? So yeah, concierge is, I mean, this guy who, when I worked in Whistler, who, he was never a friend of mine. I wasn't there long enough for him to be a friend, but he earned my respect, I guess. And I went to a party at his place once. He had one of the most amazing places in Whistler.
Yeah.
And he's a concierge.
Yeah. Because they get tipped very well if they pull through. Right?
Yeah. If you work at a hotel and you work in a place where they understand what concierges are for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I agree here. We don't have concierges.
We don't have
right?
that. And we don't have the requests that come in for that.
Yeah.
And if we did, our people just, we've always hired on personality, not skill set. And so we don't have Claydor, like we tried, but we don't have actual Claydor concierge or people who are in the know with some of those old things that
I was
that
always
used
somewhat anti-Claydor.
Let's wrap up with our...
All right, yeah. But while we're going to wrap up here, the last thing we're going to do, we have Convo and Chill. We were going to do this last week. It's a game. I ordered it on Amazon. Kylie had Table Talkers.
Table Topics.
Table Topics. Mm-hmm. I always thought it was called Table Talkers.
That's probably why you ordered the wrong thing last time.
Yeah, I ended up ordering the wrong one. We were supposed to do it last week, but of course we have ADD or ADHD or whatever it is. So who wants to draw? I'll draw it. It's in my
hand. Yeah, you draw it. You got it.
Yeah, so we're going to ask the question, and we're all going to take turns answering it.
Okay.
No, that's terrible. This is the one thing about these games. You always got to find
it. I think you got to just pick the first one. It is what it is, and we'll go through a card a session.
Oh, this is a great one.
Oh, okay.
Name something non-sexual that turns you on.
Oh, ambition. That's easy.
Ambition?
100%.
Ambition turns you on. Explain that.
Just like if I see someone who is ambitious and like just, you know, work and just wants to do better, do more, total turn on.
Like women and men or just men?
No. Ambition in general.
Huh.
Find it sexy.
Have you ever slept with somebody just because they're ambitious?
I haven't slept with a lot of people, so no.
Oh. All right. Over to you, Megan.
I think confidence.
Mm.
And that's women or men.
Confidence is pretty popular.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's unusual, but I definitely, I think you can ignore other things if someone is very confident about something. Like, I think, like, even though maybe they're not completely your body type, but they're very, they own themselves, you kind of look past that you.
She's basically describing you. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Jen. I don't think she's describing you.
Well, you know, no, not like you as in she wants to have sex with you, but just, you know, you've got your confidence, not you know, everything else per se.
Yeah.
Well, people that take chances, like even just fashion chances or just like Ooh. Are doing
peacocking.
Something.
Yeah. Like peacocks.
Or just out of the norm that like, it's like, you know what? Good for them. And like, I just, yeah, it's an, I definitely feel
that's
like
why
that's
why you liked Steve Tyler with all of his scarves.
Exactly. Yeah. See, like I do like eccentricity. Yeah. I think there's like an art to that, right?
Peacocking is definitely a good way to get attention from the other sex.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. What's your
and
statement?
You can hate it too. You can hate it. Like it could be something that's like, oh, that's awful. Why like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
But it's
so
still,
I think it's polarizing.
Effective.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What is mine? I have so many of them.
Well, you can't pick so many. What's one? What's the most unusual one you have then?
The most unusual one. Six fingers. I love. Yeah. No, just kidding. Something non-sexual that turns me on. I would have to say. I guess I don't understand what turns me on means.
Well, you should probably
like gives
figure
me
that
a
out.
Boner or makes me like.
It makes you want to go. Let's go.
Well, I don't ever think that like that. I think about this at the gym. I just don't think that way. But if something makes me catch a woman's attention or makes a woman catch my attention, I would have to say...
I know smell was one of yours for a while there.
I was just going to say smell. I was just going to say smell. If no matter what the woman looks like or the situation is or anything like that, if a girl smells good, yeah.
But is that right non-sexual there. Though? Like, I almost feel like that's borderline.
I mean, technically, smell is part of it. Could be like pheromones, which kind of comes,
right?
Which comes back to But
I don't know. I don't know.
Then
it's a
if
gray
not
area.
Smell, if not smell, and smell is a really big one with me. It would definitely be sense of humor.
Gotcha.
Like 100%. Mm-hmm. I think of partners that I've had where things went well, or partners had where things went poorly.
All four of them.
There's been four
that you. Yeah, I mean, has there been more than four or less than four? I can think of four.
What are the four you're counting?
Your wife, your
ex-wife,
current girlfriend,
yeah,
and then the two in between.
Oh, that was I was young once too. But yeah, there's not many more. Whether you count them or not,
you got married young,
though, yeah.
Too, yeah. So. But not only that, like women who I've met that I haven't had as partners.
Yeah,
really
fair enough.
I think of a woman collab, and that's actually my current partner, Carol Ann, who I've said her name 1,000 times.
Yeah, Carol.
Carol Ann. That is still the thing that I like the most about her is her sense of humor.
I will say I did date a guy once, and his name alone was why I could no longer date him.
Wait, don't say his name. Let's guess. What do you think his name was?
I'm going to guess Dick.
I'm going to guess Dustin.
Pasquale.
What?
Oh, I remember you telling us old Pasquale. Yeah.
He was authentic Italian, and that was an Italian name. And his name was Pasquale. And I was like, I cannot... date a man named I just couldn't call him that like
yeah
I,
imagine your wedding invitations
Pasquale
and every form you ever fill out together.
And there's not even a reasonable nickname, you know,
like Pesky? We talked about this in one of our podcasts. We talked about how like a bad name
ruins things.
You can't and you can't say it during sex
because
of Carol. I can't say Carol during sex.
Yeah, Pasquale. So
why do you think Brady Bunch or what?
No, Carol's
it just sounds
just,
like an 80-year-old woman.
Yeah, Carol sounds like an old
Carol.
Woman.
Carol. Kind of like Karen.
I find it hard when
that's
you meet people.
That's why I call her Carol Ann. Carol Ann's her name.
Yeah.
And I think Carol Ann, especially, this is weird. And Carol Ann, I apologize if you're listening to this. Carol Ann's mom? Because when I was first met Carol Ann, I wasn't, or Carol, I just didn't think about it that much. I was trying to ignore the fact that her name was Carol. Until I heard her mom, her mom's French Canadian, and the way she says, Carol Ann, I'm like, okay, I'll keep that in my head.
Yeah. So when she's riding, you're like, you repeat that in your head?
Yeah.
So when you're having sex with Caroline, you're thinking about her mother.
I'm thinking about her mom's. And once again, Francine, if you're hearing this, I apologize. I definitely think about her voice.
Gotcha. Well, there you go,
see,
ladies
I
and gentlemen.
See, I find bad names just as disturbing as people whose names don't match them.
Yeah, I think.
Like when you meet someone who, like, they tell you your name, you're like, no, I just rename those people. Yeah.
Hey, we renamed Pratt to Star-Lord, so...
No, what were we? What was I calling him for a while?
Ben?
Ben. I don't even remember why we called him Ben. Why did I call him Ben?
I don't know. Star-Lord for a while there because he, Chris Pratt, Star-Lord.
Oh, yeah, Star-Lord.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
And when I'd call him Ben, he'd look so like, am I getting fired?
Mm-hmm. Like, hey, Ben.
If I say no to Star-Lord, is this a bad thing?
Exactly.
Do I pass my probation? I don't know.
All right.
This is a good one. So I'm going to ask one more question, then we can wrap it up. Are you okay with paying for the first date? And when I say okay, I don't mean, yes, I'm a strong woman and blah, blah, blah. I mean, are you really okay? Like, does it not change the chances of a second date, or does it ruin them, or does it really not matter? So we'll go to Megan first. Are you okay with paying for the first date?
Yep.
No.
No, fuck you, you are.
No, I'm pretty sure I have, always.
Holy shit,
that at least is my side of it.
God, that is absolutely... Because I truly believe
if it's your idea, there's no problem with you paying. If it's the other person's idea, like if Chris called me and was like, let's go to a Rihanna concert, but you're paying, I'd be like, okay, but no.
We'll wait for my opinion, because I think mine might be a little different.
I don't know that I would pay for the first date. Granted, it's been a really long time since I've gone on a date, so it's, I guess, hard to say. Maybe it would be different now. But I would sort of go back and forth. So, like, if he paid for the first date, I would definitely pay for the second date. If we were at a movie and he bought the tickets, I would buy the popcorn. You know, so
I'm pretty sure that's actually what happened on our first date. Yeah,
so that would sort of be, you know, like, I would want to contribute.
Okay, then you're solidly a millennial.
Mm-hmm. I'm a millennial.
We've had the discussion. You're a millennial.
Zillennial.
I'm the host. For this, the purpose of this discussion, you're a millennial. I'm a little more old-fashioned. I'm not only Generation X. I grew up in Saskatchewan, which means I'm practically a boomer because Saskatchewan, everything's 20 years in the past. I think if you look at what fundamentally the point of a first date is, it's the beginning of a process where you're trying to decide if this person that I'm dating is going to be a good partner.
Okay. Somebody
that may... I may choose to start a family and spend the rest of my life with. Although at a certain age, you maybe aren't going to start a family anymore.
Or so, you just choose to never start a family, no matter your age.
Yeah, fair enough. But the idea of a first date is, is this somebody who's going to be? So I think that the role of a male, and go ahead, everybody hate me for this, fundamentally, the role of a man in a relationship is to provide.
Oh, God.
And I know...
This is a long conversation that we do not have time for today.
I feel like...
Then maybe we'll hold this over to another one.
I'm the breadwinner in my family. It does not make my husband less of a partner.
I get to answer the question. Fair enough. Because you cut me off at the beginning.
Because I know where this is going.
No, you don't know where it's going. Well, maybe you do.
Yeah.
No, but you don't know where it's going.
The man's role is to be a provider.
No, yeah, but in a very like old fashioned kind of ancient sense.
Yeah,
right.
Definitely old fashioned and ancient. I agree.
So
with you there.
In a first date scenario, when a guy is trying to prove himself in some small way to a woman to the point where they can have a second date, maybe because first dates are all about lying to each other, basically.
Well, first, like 3 months are all about lying to each other.
Yeah, I mean, but trying to say to create at least a basic impression.
And
that
maybe
this is
not
the
lying.
Kind of
you're presenting your best self.
You're not even presenting your best self. You're kind of presenting the person you aspire to be.
The best. Yeah. Fair enough.
Right. And I think when you're looking in your partner, you're like, I want to see that this person aspires to be the kind of person that I'd like to have a relationship with and maybe at some point do something long term. So even if you're just honoring an old tradition, and I'm not saying this has to set the tone for the entire relationship, and I don't think it should, but a guy should pay for the first date. There isn't, like, if you go back 100,000 years, courtship started with the male providing food to the female.
But
oh, geez, we forgot to tell her to stop.
That's why I got a swan double.
That's good.
Okay,
bless your heart.
If we go back to things that were good 100,000 years ago or 1,000 years ago, that's not a good argument because there's lots of things that were acceptable 1,000 or 100,000 years ago that are
but as a gesture.
Like, if you ask my sister this, which you can ask next
week,
but
that's a gesture is offering to pay. That's not necessarily paying. I think
that's true.
And I think, and on the flip side,
I would pay.
No, I agree with Megan. If the I'm looking for the gesture, not necessarily the act.
Yeah.
Really? See, 100%. I would not go on a second date if the woman made such a big deal that she made me pay.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Okay, but
oh, if a woman. Oh, sorry. I thought you said if a woman paid. I was like,
no. Here's my other thing, and I think this is just general etiquette.
I wouldn't make a big deal. I'm looking for the gesture.
If somebody offers to pay, okay. And this isn't just a first date. This is even if you're going out for dinner with a friend. If somebody offers to pay, you say no once.
Yeah.
And then if the person insists, you let them pay.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
Because it's important to them that they're paying.
Yeah.
So if I was on a first date with a woman and the check came, and keep in mind, I've never been on a first date with a woman where me paying I said, oh, I'll be happy to get this. They're like, no, let me. I'd be like, no, please, I insist. If they kept going, I'd be like, yeah, okay, anything's going to happen again.
See, right? Okay, so on the flip side, from the millennials' perspective, especially, I mean, me and Jen are both similar positions. Like, yeah. When you have a high-ranking position as a female and you are a high-income earner, I think that there's more of a threat with especially misogynistic men, but whatever. For me, I'm reading the male situation in that, is he threatened because I have a powerful role and can pay for my own?
100%.
And I think that them allowing you to pay your way, even if it's not like maybe I just pay my portion, not for the whole thing, I think is a respectful gesture of like, yeah, she can take care of herself. She's an independent person. I don't have to take care of her.
But then why can't that wait for the second date? Or why can't that be a conversation at some other time? Because first dates are these weird, and I really, like, I really enjoyed first dates. I was only on what? Like, you know, one, two, three, four.
Three
like
recently.
Five of them? Yeah. No, five, I think, in my brief period of being single. And I really enjoyed them. I thought they were a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong. I had one relationship where it got to a point where the expectation was, we're going to go out twice a week.
Yeah.
And I'm always going to pay. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's the relationship.
And see, that's like, dangerous, right?
Well, that's garbage, that. Right? Yeah. Like, no. I have bills too, right?
But like, I think the thing with Megan, and I think maybe this is another conversation, but just like finding a man who's okay with a woman earning more than him, mm-hmm. and having that sort of, you know, perception of power is not an easy thing to do in today's world.
And I'm not saying all women feel the same as us too. No. I think there are lots of ladies out there who definitely think the same as you, is like, if he doesn't pay on the first date, 100%. There's no second.
I swear my sister's one of them.
Yeah,
right?
I've heard it on the radio. Yeah. I hear it with my friends. Like, you're not wrong. And even for millennial women, there are lots of women who think the same way.
Yeah.
But I think depending on you as a woman, like what your beliefs are, what your financial well-being is and all that stuff, like I think, and also to be fair, my first date ever was, I was 14 and we had allowances. And my second first date from this relationship was very complicated. And we were basically, it was a friend's date. So it wasn't really an official like
date.
You know, he picks me up at the door and opens my door for me. It was like, we're going to meet somewhere and have a bite to eat and do play some games. Right. So it wasn't like an official, like formal date like that, I guess.
Well, and we're also talking about normal gendered roles. I mean, what is the situation if you're two men or two women on a date? Like, this isn't even a conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Is it who asked, right?
And like, I think that I like the who asks.
Yeah.
I think that's an important thing. It's my idea to take you to La Ronde or some, like, the Fairmont, like, balcony or something. And
or even Starbucks for coffee, right?
Yeah, like depending on what asks. It is. Yeah.
Okay, my traditional way of looking at it is obviously not considering two males or two women.
No, but I think you have to at this day and age, right? Because I think you're still in a
You have to consider it if you're a man going on a date with another man.
No, but I'm just saying your perspective is very rooted in this historical gendered specific situation.
Yes. It's heteronormative.
Yeah. It's not taking into account that,
you know, I'm pretty open-minded, but most first dates I'll ever go on will be with a woman.
Well, that's for you, though, but you're saying who should pay, and I'm saying there's more to the equation than just your experience, or my experience, or Megan's experience, right? Mm-hmm. We're all what did you say?
Well, heteronormative is like the assumption that everyone around you is heterosexual and is going to follow the same norms as you, right? So, like, seeing the world in a hetero view versus seeing the view in
that's
an inclusive view.
I hope we get somebody who is gay on this.
I'll bring Joel.
Joel would be a great guy.
He'd be hilarious, first of all, and he'd be fun. Yeah,
and because I think that would be an interesting thing is, how does it work with gay people?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's who asks. Honestly, I think it's who asks. Like, when you go, and I mean, Joel could probably tell you the story, but between the two of them, they're engaged, and there was always the expectation that Curtis would be the one that would propose, but they set that early on, right? Mm-hmm. So,
that's interesting.
Anyways, we should wrap this up.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Get ready to hear the outro and cue the music. Thank you for listening to the Loose and Conversational podcast. Catch us every week at looseandconversational.com. You can reach us through the website or email directly at opaq72@looseandconversational.com. That's O as in hour, H as in hour, P as in pseudonym, E as in urn, U as in urn, K as in knob, E as in I as in I, W as in right, 72@looseandconversational, spelt just like it sounds. Bye, everyone.